The economy the new Federal Reserve chair inherits. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Government bonds continue to fall on anticipation of higher interest rates ahead. The yield on the government's 10-year note is above 2.75% this morning. Citing gains in employment, consumer spending, and capital investment by business, the guardians of interest rates in Washington say we should all expect rates to go up this year. But not this week. The Federal Reserve expects inflation to stabilize around its target of 2% a year. The Fed said yesterday, and in a pro forma vote, the Fed unanimously approved President Trump's choice, Jerome Powell, to be the new chair of the Federal Reserve starting this Saturday. Powell used to work at the Carlyle Group and as a Treasury Department official, but he's not an economist. Janet Yellen's last days of work is a teachable moment about what is arguably the single most powerful financial policy position in the world. For that, I spoke to Josh Bivens, research director at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington.
Powell is going to be inheriting a Federal Reserve that has definitely done some interest rate increases over the past couple of years. It is clearly in the mode of the economy is recovering nicely. We're getting very close to full employment. Now is the time to rein it in. I actually don't even know if I share that that's the correct way the Fed should be acting, but it's definitely the way the Fed is acting. Yellen was handed over an economy that it was much more contested what direction, even up or down, the Fed should be trying to push the recovery. And so she really had to decide firmly which path, up or down, do I go? He is inheriting a path where lots of the conventional wisdom is the Fed should absolutely be on a steady diet of interest rate increases.
And you started to allude to this. You're not quite sure the Fed is on exactly the right trajectory. I mean, these experts keep coming on this program to call it full employment. And now's not the time?
I mean, we're definitely in a much better place than we were 4 years ago and 3 years ago and even 2 years ago. But to my mind, I think we're at full employment when you see wage increases that are fast enough that they threaten to push the overall inflation target well above the Fed's comfort zone, which is a 2% target. We're still not there.
Now, moving beyond monetary policy, the Fed is also a big financial regulator, and some see a little bit more daylight between Powell and Yellen on the issue of deregulating the financial system. Do you?
I do. I mean, I would say a couple things. One, we know Powell was a Treasury official in the first George Bush administration. He's a Republican. He's a moderate Republican, but just based on Democrats versus Republicans, you tend to have different views on what the proper sort of stance on regulation is. And two, I think Yellen really did take the need to keep the financial sector excesses in check very seriously. I mean, her last speech she gave at the Jackson Hole Economic Policy Conference this past year, it was a really firm defense of sort of the stepped up regulations that have been put in place since the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. You could argue that that speech was sort of a real challenge to the Trump administration and something that made them reluctant to reappoint her. And so, yeah, I think of all the worries that I have about the handover from Yellen to Powell, I really worry that this is a transition where the Fed takes that responsibility much less seriously going forward.
Josh Bivens, Director of Research at the Economic Policy Institute. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down just slightly. Stock index futures in the U.S. are mixed. The S&P future up 0.1%. The Dow future down 0.1%. Business is global. India's government today unveiled a new annual budget. It's an important moment for a country with 1.2 billion people where only 4% pay income tax and 75% live in the countryside without universal access to electricity, water, toilets. My marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, has more.
Unveiled this morning in New Delhi, India's budget promises $225 billion in rural investment in roads, irrigation, and electrical infrastructure. India's finance minister also announced plans for what he called the world's largest government-funded healthcare program, saying it would cover some 500 million of the country's poorest people. Doctors and clinics, particularly in rural areas, are virtually non-existent. India's countryside is fertile, but for the 750 million farmers and agricultural workers who depend on that land, making a living is often a life or death struggle. The government has its eye on elections due by next spring, and rural voters are key. The problem, as ever, will be making sure the money reaches those who need it most.
If you miss Anu Anand's early Marketplace broadcast, she's in the Morning Report podcast feed with me every day.
15 of the world's leading transportation and tech companies are signing on to an agreement today to try to help make cities easier to live in as they change the way we get around these cities. The 10 principles they've promised to follow attempt to prioritize people over vehicles and call for open data sharing, Marketplace's Jed Kim reports.
The signers include rideshare giants Uber, Lyft, and the Chinese company Didi. Robin Chase co-founded Zipcar and started the collaboration. She says cities are getting a lot of different advice on how to integrate all the disruptions tech advances are bringing to transportation.
If we don't get a handle on the right paths as cities build out, there's just going to be a lot of money wasted and cities will get worse and not better.
By joining forces, these companies can help cities navigate the future of urban transportation, a future they say should cut emissions and limit congestion. Sarah Kaufman researches transportation at NYU. She says it makes a lot of sense for these companies to work together.
The motive for these companies to, quote unquote, help with congestion is self-serving in that they operate much better when congestion is reduced.
Philadelphia and Paris have already signed on. Globally, changes are coming to every major city. It's estimated transforming transportation in the world's 50 largest metropolises will be a $600 billion business. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
This week, the City of London approved a new app-driven private minibus service. Here's why I mention it. It's owned by the Ford Motor Company. Ford's thinking about ways to be a transport, not just a car and truck company. The company's called Chariot and will let people pre-book, pre-assign bus routes in places where public transit is iffy. In the U.S., Ford's company Chariot is already in San Francisco, Seattle, and a few other places. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.